Hi, this is Prudy.
Hello, Prudy. Here we go live on BBS Radio, and thanks for being here, Prudy. As usual, this is a simulcast with a conference call on this beautiful Monday, June 3rd, 2019. Prudy, how do you do?
I do well. Thank you for asking. How about yourself?
All right. Doing well. Yes.
Good. Good. Good wood.
It's hot in California.
Oh. It's hot here, but it's a nice hot. It was only 77 today.
Right.
It's been okay. In the 90s. Yeah.
All right. I have no clue what temperature we have over here, but I think it's in the upper 80s is my guess.
Mm-hmm. That's hot.
It's so much better than it being cold, in my opinion.
I second that.
Right.
Much better than being cold.
Yes.
Looking forward to another evening with Lynn
All
and
right.
Terry and the Sources. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they're going to say something good tonight.
All right.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing where you and I have ran into and many others with Vin and Terry and, you know, can you imagine it not being in your life?
I'm very blessed. And all the people I've met, you know, we don't even know each other, but we know each other.
Yes.
Yeah. It's wonderful. Good people.
Yeah. Los Molinos, 92 degrees.
There you go. That's hot.
I can. Yeah. Vin is trying to play a recording, I guess.
Okay.
Was making this movie, and she was working with a fellow by the name of...
I think it's confirmed. I think you were really surprised that I was actually inviting you. You couldn't get over it at the time because you thought... I wouldn't be real or something.
Play.
But, you know, I said, come on in. And, you know, you brought your guitar.
We just joined in. Welcome.
And then Carla did a channeling in her hotel room. A bunch of people gathered around her. And she had a table. It was an expo. It was called the UFO Congress. And she had a table where she was selling her books. And so I offered to sit at her table for a while. And she told me that apparently I sold more books in a short while than anyone in the history of the Law of One.
Oh, absolutely. She would tag people on the aisle and say, you've got to read this book. And they just couldn't, you know, avoid him. It was amazing.
And keep in mind...
Very persuasive.
This was before I met Daphne. This was way at the very beginning of my exploration of this. And when I was deciding, really, if I really wanted to write the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and sorry,
Evan,
hi, this is Jennifer. I came on during the recording.
Hello, Jennifer. Welcome.
It's the one.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, everybody.
I win.
Apparently, I sold more books in a short while than anyone in the history of is doing
That's
now.
Cool.
He
That's pretty cool, Wynn.
Wynn can throw his voice.
I did you, but I don't think...
I love to hear her voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Good evening. Welcome to the conference call. Please say your name and location. But of course, only if you want to.
I am going to do a replay tonight from September of 2012.
Welcome.
Would
to
you
call.
Like to say? Hi, Wynn, down in Northern Ohio. Hi, everybody.
Hi,
Don.
And then welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location.
Positive greetings. Hi from Sedona. It's Raiden.
Welcome, Raiden. Thank you for being
Hi,
here.
Hi, Raiden.
Hi, everyone.
And I welcome all those that are listening in online through BBS. Thank you for being here tonight.
I'm gonna start this call in about 2 minutes because it's long.
All right. So welcome to the next caller. Please say your name and location.
Hello, everyone. Shirley from Ohio.
Good evening, Shirley. Welcome.
Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Shirley.
Are you doing a replay tonight, Wynn?
Yeah. I am a little tired today. I'm not supposed to get tired.
It's the new moon in Gemini.
Welcome to the next caller. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
It's Roger in Austin, Texas.
Hello, Roger. Good evening.
Hi. Hi.
Hi,
Don. Hi.
And if you just dialed in to BBS Radio Online and you wonder why you don't hear anything, that is because nobody's talking.
I'm gonna start. Here we go.
This conference is being recorded.
This is June 3rd, 2000.
Muted.
Everybody everywhere. And tonight I'm going to play a replay from 2012. And I hope it's good. I didn't preview it, but it had such an interesting title. And it was Carla Ruckert was on with me. She wasn't my guest. I mean, she became such a regular. And the topic was, Terry, really the wife of Socrates? And I'm convinced she was. And what convinced me more than anything else is from most of the time that I knew Terry, she had this guy living on her couch that never changed his clothes, never worked, went out and just talked to people at different places, had a group of friends, wrote poetry, translated Greek, and... Terry, are you on the line? She should be on the line. And was studying Socrates, and he was the spitting image of Socrates. And... And he also had a very remarkable resemblance to Brigham Young, the Joseph Smith sidekick. And in this lifetime, he was involved in the early stages of Scientology, writing some of Ron Hubbard's manuals. By the way, I exposed myself to Scientology long ago, and I didn't like it. It was too militant. I had a lot of things wrong with it. Sometimes I went down to the Celebrity Center and played music. They had a coffee shop, and that was, you know, they were always trying to get me to get audited. And what I learned was, there's a very good chance that Ron Hubbard was replaced with a clone or a lookalike after 1965. And so the original Scientology, when John Sanborn was involved, was different, totally different than what Scientology has become. And I in no way endorse it the way it is now. It's got so many things wrong with it. I don't want to trash Scientology here. But I didn't realize that it changed so much after 1965. And I'm willing to... But it's very interesting how a big soul that was in this realm and kept coming back, at least on the three lifetimes I could identify him as. And I'm pretty sure, I'm not going to go into it, I'm pretty sure he was Socrates. I'm pretty sure he was Brigham Young. And I know he was John Sanborn this lifetime. And I'm pretty sure Terry was the wife of Socrates. And she was exactly duplicating how she was with Socrates, with John this life, who was living on her couch. And if you read about Socrates, he never made any attempt to be famous or to get recognition. He would just go and hang out in the coffee shops. And he had something that's now called the Socratic method. He would ask people questions and make them reveal themselves. And it was Plato who immortalized the things he said. It's so interesting to identify somebody like that and see them through many lifetimes and see how the same soul expresses itself according to the circumstances they find themselves, because every life is a new creation. So here we go. Are you there, Terry, by any chance?
Yeah, I'm here.
Probably. Did you hear me talking about John Sanborn?
Yeah, I don't know if I heard everything, but
I'm doing a replay from 2012 where Carla was on the call with us, and I'm sure you're there too. And the topic was Terry really the wife of Socrates? And as you know, we have been mentioning, Terry is working on her book where she's talking about some of the past lives she remembers, and I think it's going to be a blockbuster, and she's letting me help her. At least at the moment she's letting her help her. She might change her mind. But so this is like a precursor to her book.
I don't think she's confirmed. I think you were really surprised that I was actually inviting you. You couldn't get over it at the time because you thought, well, you know, that I wouldn't be real or something. But, you know, I said, come on in. And, you know, you brought your guitar. We had a great time.
And then Carla was talking about the first time we met when I went to Laughlin, Nevada, and she was giving a talk. And I think I knocked on her window of the hotel with my guitar, and she invited me in, and I was surprised because I was kind of intimidated. I believe that was the first time we met. Carla did a channeling in her hotel room. A bunch of people gathered around her, and she had a table. It was an expo. It was called the UFO Congress, and she had a table where she was selling her books. And so I offered to sit at her table for a while, and she told me that apparently I sold more books in a short while than anyone in the history of the Law of One.
Oh, absolutely. She would tag people on the aisle and say, you've got to read this book. they just couldn't, you know, avoid him. It was amazing.
And keep in mind...
Very persuasive.
This was before I met Daphne. This was way at the very beginning of my exploration of this. And when I was deciding really if I really wanted to write the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce and to take the time, and did I believe it? And was it as important as I thought it might be? And so because I met Carla, I ended up writing that book. I ended up meeting Daphne you guys have been listening in, and you're hearing on a regular basis the results of all that. But I always think the way something gets started is very important. The way the little cogs in the wheel click together
to make something happen. So, Carla, are you an expert? You know, one of the things that we were talking about on the last 2 weeks, and I had a lot of emails from people, and that were really, we didn't do channeling in the last 2 weeks. Oftentimes on Monday, I pick a topic and I ask Terry questions. But the last 2 weeks I talked, and it's interesting, I always get emails, when we love you. Where is Terry? Where is Daphne? You know, and so, but you know what? If you don't keep in motion, everything gets stale and frozen, and you lose the energy of it. So we were talking about worthiness, self-worth, what causes people to not feel worthy, and we had a really good talk about it. People sent me emails and got a lot out of it, and certainly I think when I met you, Carla, I don't think I was putting out a lot of self-worth. And you wouldn't say that, would you? I looked like...
No, you were very humble.
Well, no, self-worth is different than humility, okay? I mean, I think I'm still humble, but I'm able to stand in my center and be confident. Whereas, you know, I spent a lot of years of my life, even when I had great things to offer, I was not able to express myself confidently. And I really learned to go through that pattern to switch it around and what caused it. And I talked about that a couple of weeks ago. And then last week, I talked about unconditional love and what that actually was. At least from my point of view, and that because I think when people hear the word unconditional love, and when I heard that word years ago, it sounds like you're supposed to wear your heart on your sleeve and be nice to everybody. So at some point in this call, I was going to ask your take on this. But before I do, I would like to ask you, for all the people that are listening tonight that never heard you before, what do you think is really important about the raw material? Why should people be interested?
I think that the raw material helps most when a person does not have a religion to comfort him. If the religion has failed and he is needing to create his spiritual path on his own, then I think the Law of One becomes very helpful because it, without being religious or dogmatic, it offers a view of who we are, why we're here, and where we're going that makes sense and gives the person a choice to make and goals to set for himself if he happens to find the Law of One material helpful. So that's probably the single most helpful thing about it. The Law of One material can be, you know, said in one sentence. All things are one, and that one thing is love. But when you start peeling that apart, and analyzing it the way Don did. And Don, by the way, was an engineer and a physicist, so he was asking technical and scientific questions of a person who never took a technical or scientific course in her life, past chemistry one. But, I mean, that didn't matter because I was in a trance, so, you know, it just sailed on without me, basically. But it goes, you know, you can get far into the details of it, and it's fascinating all the way. And I've read the Law of One daily along with the Bible and other things ever since we produced that material. And I find new things in it all the time because that material meets you where you are. And every time I get to, you know, that particular session, I'm at a different place. And so it helps me in a different way to think about things.
You know, I think.
I think. My own now?
You're
thank you.
Out. There you go.
Wait, somebody's muting me.
Yeah, you were dual on there on the phone and.
Oh yeah. Okay. I think that if somebody comes from a religious tradition, what happens if it's a really good religion is that the loving energy passes down through the dogma and the doctrine. It's just that even if the doctrine and dogma is not right, even if it's gotten distorted, if they're in a good church and if they have the right attitude with it, the love gets passed down. But when you try to explain that to someone in today's world who didn't come with that kind of loving energy attached to it, religion sounds like a fairy tale. It sounds like, could that be real? I mean, there was this guy, he's the son of God, everyone keeps believing in him, and what does that mean? And I would have put myself in that category when I was younger. I said, show me. I didn't come from a loving environment. I didn't get brought up in a loving religion. And I was on my own. I said, okay, figure it out. And so I was looking for things that I could believe in, that I could prove to myself. And I guess ask and you shall receive, because I see the value of the raw material. I see the value of my personal experience of how this all unfolded to me. It reaches someone, and it makes them say, maybe there really is something out there. And then they start looking for it. And, of course, the goal is to find the love, to create a community. You know, we're doing a lot of things amongst the people that are discovering me to create community amongst them. And I see how it works. And it's not religious, but then it starts, you can see how a religion develops, because once you have a loving community, other people feel it and they want to be part of it. And they think, well, I have to believe this, this, and this, and this, if I'm going to be part of that community. And the truth of the matter is, with unconditional love, it's a vibration. It's not an acceptance or rejection. And if you're in that state of unconditional love, somebody feels the energy and it shifts them. And they say, this feels good. This is the love that I never had in my family. This is the love that I never had as a child. This is the love I never had from my wife or my husband, you know? And suddenly they're feeling, what does unconditional love feel like? Maybe I should say what it is, because I'm sure there's someone out there listening that is saying to themselves, I would like to feel unconditional love. Carla, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Right. Well, in one way to put unconditional love is to say that you love people whether they love you back or not. You don't expect any return. You don't have any attachment to the outcome. You just love people. You love them at the soul level and recognize the Creator in them. When people put their hands together in the Eastern fashion and bow, it's not just a pretty gesture of hello and goodbye. It means the Creator in me greets the Creator in you. And I have always in my life had that lesson of loving somebody that and expecting nothing in return. So that, you know, my love was completely independent and strong and healthy and, you know, viable without, you know, being watered by somebody saying, you're so great, you're so terrific. And not, you know, there's no stimulus necessary whatsoever. You're loving people right out of your heart. Just love everybody. I know when I was a little kid, I used to, my mother was so embarrassed. I would, especially since I was cross-eyed, which didn't help at all. And here was this little gangly 2 or 3 year old walking on trains. You know, back in when I was little, people still rode trains. Locally as well as across the country, and mother had to take a train a lot of times to where she was going, and I would get loose from her and I'd walk up and down the aisles talking to people. I was absolutely sure they would love me, and so naturally they did. But it was terribly embarrassing to my mother. But I think it's that kind of. I mean, it's nothing outward. It's an inward feeling. It comes from your heart. It comes from a knowing that that person that you're loving is the creator, is beautiful. And you just feel the energy from that person and let your energy flow into theirs and let it all go for free. There's no charge. You know, I love you for nothing. It feels wonderful once you get the hang of it. I think a lot of the problems in this world are caused by people who think that if you know, you love somebody, then they owe you, then they should love you back, or they should do this, or they should do that. That's actually not true at all. Nobody's entitled to anything, you know. But you love who you love. And I have found that I can move to a place where even the people I don't love, I love, because I'm moved to that place within me where I kneel at the cradle of Jesus, if you will, or our spiritual selves, to put it another way, that we are nursing, as Mary did, the baby Jesus. And it's up to us to nurse that spiritual child within so that it can grow strong and healthy and viable in this world. And it's a difficult world to do that in. You have to, you said, when you basically have to fall in love with yourself and just rest on who you are, and, well, that's it, you know, sue me. And this is what you see is what you get. And then it's a wonderful thing to have that feeling and float along on the strength of the truth. That truth is that we truly are one, and we truly are all connected. And we've probably worked together in another lifetime, because we've had so many, and there really aren't that many people in the universe. You know, it's been a long life. I mean, you know, when you count all the incarnations. So, you know,
how many incarnations do you think the average person has in this realm?
Oh, golly. How many do you think there are? I've never thought about that.
It depends on
what people want to do. You know, if they think, well, in my next life, what I really would like to do for my service is this, and what I would like to learn is that, and then you pick, you know, you make contracts with the people that are your mom and dad and your wife or husband and your kids and, you know, all the people in your family, the people you're working with, you know, you've made agreements with them, and a lot of them fall through. But that's okay, because redundancy is built into the system. And so you probably wait sometimes until everybody is ready to make those agreements and go into an incarnation. So it'd be hard to guess, but surely it's in the thousands.
Yeah. You know, I think you're describing something that I just want to point out, because this is something I grasp now, but something I didn't grasp for years, even though I knew reincarnation was real. When you start understanding that there's time and there's timelessness, and Ra calls it space-time and time-space, in the other realms, time does not work like it does here. So when you think of thousands of lifetimes here, it seems like an incredibly long time. The fact of the matter is, you can go back into the other realms and you move into no time, and you're just hanging out there waiting to meet the woman you loved at some other time, and she comes in and you move out of no time and you jump in and take a body. That's how I think it works. And so when it seems like in this realm, it could have been 1,000 years. In time space, it just was like a snap of the fingers. It's just you're back, there she is again. Mm-hmm. And does that make sense to you, Carla?
A thousand ages in his sight or but a moment gone.
Yeah. So when we think of dying and time spent, and you can start to realize that, now I can't understand how that feels. I don't think anyone can. Can you understand it? Can you relate to how that feels, being in time space, Carla?
Oh, yeah, I've been in time space. It's lovely. Anybody that's had the experience will never fear death again.
Yeah.
I've actually died and come back. So
this lifetime.
Yeah, when I was 13, actually, my kidneys failed.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have the kind of medicines they have now. They didn't have, dialysis. They didn't have transplants. None of that technology was in place in the 50s. And it was just basically, well, I don't know. She might live. She might die. Well, everybody thought I would die, but ha-ha. Fooled them. But I did actually die for about 2 minutes, according to the doctors that told my parents at the time. And they worked and worked to get me breathing again and so forth. But while that happened, I had much more than 2 minutes worth of experience. I was without any break in consciousness whatsoever. There wasn't any tunnel for me. There was no bright light. I just flipped over into, oh, I don't hurt anymore. Oh, there aren't any marks on my body. Oh, my goodness, this is so great. And I could see that all my friends were, I knew all my friends were waiting for me in this, I could see the dome of a temple that was over a hill. It's a beautiful, beautiful place, like a parkland. And I could hear music, very faint, but very full. And it sparkled in the air. Everything that made noise also made sparkles in the air. And then, unfortunately, my journey to the temple was interrupted by a voiceover. I don't know who that voiceover was, but it was sort of like, well, you know, we never do this, but since, you know, you had a worthy desire, we'll give you a choice. You can either go back for two incarnations and do half of what you plan for yourself in one, half of what you plan for yourself in the other, or you can get back into this body, even though it's kind of lost factory specs, you know, no more new car smell, and see what you can do to do those things in one incarnation as you planned. And this fits for me. I was the kind of student, for instance, that would take a 21-hour course, you know, for one semester, and you're supposed to stop at 12. But I just, you know, everything looked so yummy, and I wanted to learn that and that and more of that. So it fits my basic personality that I would have planned a lot for one lifetime. Anyway, I thought about, do I want two lifetimes to come back, two more childhoods? My childhood had not been a happy one. I thought, no, I think I'm going to go back and give it a whirl now. And I instantly was back in that painful body, and I could see faces over me. They were working over me to try to get my heart started again. So that was my experience. Take it for what it's worth. Most people will say, well, no, that really was a dream, or that was a vision that you had because you were so ill or something like that. But you know when you're there and when you're not there, and I was there. So that was my experience of the other side, and it was a delightful experience indeed. So I really look forward to it, but not until I'm done. I am absolutely determined to finish.
You know,
the 21 hours.
You know, I have to tell you, when Carla was originally channeling the Ra material, the Ra group said they had waited 200 years to find someone or a group that they could trust enough to come through. See, one of the things about this, for those of you that want to channel, or that think you want...
Hello?
Vin, you cut out.
There you are. Did I call again? Or?
No, hold on. We've been dropped out.
Okay, I'll hang on then.
Yes.
Every now and then, the conference calls drop one of us.
Okay, Wynn, can you go back on your cell phone?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, this is on your cell phone. Yes.
Yeah, I'm back. Okay, I'm not as loud, but we'll have to go with it. Okay, we switched to the other phone. So they waited 200 years to find a group that would hold the purity, and I was saying, people that want voices talking to them, you don't know how highly intended you need to be to not get a negative source. Almost always, if it's a game or a play toy, you'll get a negative source. And you won't know it's a negative source because they'll say anything they want. They'll say, hi, this is the Rod Room. We're so glad we found you. And so don't think the channeling is something to take lightly. Both Daphne and Carla, when they first started channeling, both had what Carla calls psychic greetings, which is her way of saying negative attacks in a positive way. Okay, but nonetheless, it almost killed her. And Daphne had a similar thing. You know, Daphne, you're in the background now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You're being quiet. And, you know, there's a lot of things here that I know you're interested in. Like, we're talking about religion and channeling. And Daphne has a background of being a Catholic. Well, actually, she has a background of being a Catholic, a Jew, and a Greek Orthodox. But she mostly identifies with being a Catholic. And she has had...
I think that's an oversimplification, Wynn, in all due respect. Let's just say I'm esoteric, okay?
You're esoteric. Okay. But in any case, reconciling channeling and negative attacks with religion, is there anything you want to share or ask Carla?
It's a joy to have Carla here. I right now I'm working with the level of planetary logos, Vyanta Karana, and it's another level of grounding energy, and I'm very honored to do that with everybody right now. And I'm just kind of holding the space here.
Yeah, right. You're beautiful energy, Daphne, and you truly do hold the space.
Thank you, Carla. Right. Blessings to you. And you too, Terry.
Thank you. Can't you just feel the energy? Isn't that great? Thank you.
Terry, how about you? Would you like to share anything? Or ask Carla anything?
It's a stabilization to have you out there, and we set up things, got things started, and made a track that made it easier for other people. And so I really appreciate that and love you.
Yeah, love you right back.
They constantly tell us that, even in our work, that Carla is the foundation of it. That if, you know, and I know that's true. If she didn't do what she did, none of this would be happening. And, you know, a lot of people are listening today that are fans of George Norrie's, and I hope one day you can start sending George emails and say, we should have Carla on the line, and one day I'll bring that up to their producer, because that would be a great contribution to the world. Let's see. It's 6:51. We have about 5 minutes. Maybe, Carla, I'll open up for a couple questions or comments from people that are listening. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think if you do, if someone's, I can't do this on the people listening on the radio. Well, you could actually, but you get all confused because we're doing the conference line on the radio. But on the conference line, if you do *6, you'll unmute yourself. Anybody want to share anything? Anyone been influenced by the raw material? Anyone want to ask a question? *6.
And when there is a phone number for BBS that can be called in?
But you know what? It's too complicated.
Okay.
Because right now we're putting the conference call on BBS, and that solved all our problems. Remember all the problems we were having? So it'll get confusing if somebody calls BBS, okay? So anyone on the conference line? Let me see if we've unmuted everybody. Are they unmuted?
They can unmute themselves. No, you're back.
When?
Everybody
want to
say hello to Carla?
Hi, Carla.
Hello, Carla.
Hello, Carla.
Hey, everybody.
Hello, Carla.
Okay, everyone's muted again. And now, if someone wants to make a personal comment, we have about 4 minutes. Anyone with *6, and you'll be on.
Steve, can you hear Steve? Hello?
We hear you.
Hi, Steve? You can hear me?
Yes,
we hear
excellent.
You.
Oh, good. I am very stuck. I am stuck in fear in my house since rats bit through the water pipes last winter, and I can't get out of the fear. And I'm all alone and isolated. My dog died, and my best friend moved out of my life. What can I do to make my situation better?
In the first place, you need another dog. Definitely.
Yes.
Definitely need another dog. In the second place, you might look around and see if you would be interested in the material. I think it is in book 5 of The Law of One. I think we had kept it was personal material, but it was instructions on how to cleanse a house.
Uh-huh.
And it's very simple. You use salt and you use water, and they give you very simple things to say. And you cleanse everything in the house, all the doors, all the windows, except for one entrance where, you know, you can come and go. And then everything else is cleansed, and then you have to cleanse that one place. So during the time that you've cleansed that one last place, you have to ask permission of the salt in order to enter or leave the dwelling. But it takes about 3 days for this to work, and you can really feel the energy change when you've done this. It's just a wonderful cleansing.
Does it matter that the house is in such a state of clutter and disarray since it was traumatized by the rats, and I was too, and I'm pretty crippled, a lot of pain head to toe. I can't reach all my windows physically, and there's so much clutter around. Is that adding to the negativity